All right, let's get started. So hello everyone. I'm Casey Uhlenhut. I'm a program manager on the .NET and Visual Studio team at Microsoft. Specifically in that team, I work on the C# compiler team, and in that I work on providing tooling support for C# in Visual Studio. So today, this is what we're going to talk about. So the first thing I'm going to do is introduce Visual Studio 2015 that came with Roslyn and what that is. Then we're going to go through and talk about all the productivity enhancements that we put in Visual Studio 2015, and then all the ones that we've done in Visual Studio 15, which is the next version. And then we're going to go through the languages. So how many of you are using C# today? C# 6 today? Do you know? Oh, okay, so it's like over half the room. Cool. So we'll do a quick refresher on C# 6, and then we'll go into C# 7. We'll do the same with VB14 and VB15. And then we're going to end on performance. So a lot of people and customers have given us feedback that performance in Visual Studio is not up to snuff, so we're going to go through all the different performance enhancements that we've done to Visual Studio for the next version. So Visual Studio 2015, the big thing that came with it was that it shipped with something called Roslyn. Roslyn is the name of the project where we basically re-architected the entire compiler from native code into managed code, and this is only for .NET languages, so only for C# and VB. And the reason we did this was twofold. We did it so we could write new features faster, which includes new language features as well as new IDE features. And then we did it to provide an open source API surface. And what this does, lets anyone write a custom analyzer for live code analysis, which you'll see in a little bit. So for the remainder of this talk, we're just going to talk about how the power of Roslyn has improved Visual Studio 2015 and then Visual Studio 15. And because doing air quotes is really hard when you're like typing, we're just going to call it Next. Are we all good with that? So Visual Studio Next is Visual Studio 15. Cool. So as part of my job, I talk to a lot of developers, and I interview a lot of developers, and I actually watch developers sit and work, and I basically say, oh, they didn't even use this. I'm like, did you know about this feature? And like, oh, no. And so basically, I just figure out when they get stuck, what do they do, and where are the bottlenecks in their workflow. And so as part of that, I've been investigating what developers find makes them more productive, and where are they finding the gaps in their productivity today. And so these are the five main things that they think contribute to their productivity today. Does this resonate with all of you out there? Kinda? Is there something obviously missing from here? All right, nothing. Good. With that, whatever, let's go to code. So I'm going to show you how we've basically improved on these five things in Visual Studio 2015 and Visual Studio Next. So we'll start with 2015. So here I have a super basic program. I basically have a bunch of classes, so a base class person, student, teacher. I have some tests at the bottom, and then I have this method that just prints out student and teacher names and grades and things like that. And if you look, you can see this blaring red over here. I have failing tests. And just at first glance, I don't really know why. I can see that if I hover, I can see that it's this test that's failing. I can see that it's saying, I expect honor student Will to print 4.0. I can see here that I put 4.0 as the input. And if I come to this method up here, that it should just print the name, the GPA. So what the heck is going wrong here? So something that we added in Visual Studio 2015 Update 1 is something called the interactive window. So let me unpin this. So if you come up to this quick launch window, which hopefully, yeah, there you go. There's this thing called quick launch, so you can just type in the name of things and it'll help you find them faster. So there's this thing called the C# interactive window, which is basically a REPL, which is a read, eval, print loop. So I can basically type any expression in here and click enter, and then it's going to evaluate it and print out the output. So a lot of people like to call it a glorified calculator. So I could do 2 plus 2, and it's going to print 4. I could do... console dot write line in here. You can see I get IntelliSense in here as well, which is pretty nice. Hello, MS Ignite New Zealand. and it'll print it out, et cetera. So you can type any expression here and click enter and it'll get evaluated. So a lot of people have been asking for this, especially since it's been in a lot of other languages. So now it is in Visual Studio 2015 Update 1. Which is all great and dandy, except in Visual Studio 2015 Update 2, we added the ability to actually load your project context in here. So if I zoom in, you can see this initialize interactive with project. So what that's going to do is if I click this, it's going to take my project context and add all my references to that inside the interactive window so that I can play with all the members inside of my actual program over here. So you can see it's adding all these references. Now the first thing I'm going to do is use a C# 6 language feature real quick to make it so I don't have to keep qualifying things. But now you can see in IntelliSense, I can immediately access printed form, which was that method I had over there. So what I'm going to do over here, I can do var Casey equals new person, and I can access person in here, which was the class I defined, and then now type Casey. Oops. And then I'll print it out. And so it's a way that you can interactively engage with your project without having to be in debug mode at all. And so you can just play around with everything in here. So another thing we added was if you are one of these developers who likes to interact with things before you build and things like that, you can actually send snippets from the editor to the interactive window now in Visual Studio 2015 Update 2. So if I do Control EE, you can see that sent this person's array over here. And so now I can write like a for each loop for every persons, and then console.WriteLine, printed form. Oops. And then we can see it printed out, and then that's how I can figure out that, oh, Willow returned 4 instead of 4.0. So I just have a formatting issue here. So now I can come back up here to my actual method and just add my actual formatter. And now you can also, if I send a snippet and I already defined this, so we seeded this with printed form, and now I'm going to resubmit it. And now anything from now on will use this new definition of printed form. So if I use Alt Up to navigate my history in here, and I do this again, I can see that's correctly going to print 4.0. And so again, this is just an interactive way to play with your program, test things out. A lot of people use it for like unit testing and things like that. Another use case is to play with APIs in it. So a lot of people will, like, for example, as I've heard, the famous James Newton King is from New Zealand. And if you want to play around with NewtonSoft, for example, and you don't know how the serializing works, you can play with it in this interactive window. And it makes it much easier to like figure out how APIs work, what calls you need to do, et cetera. Can you all hear me when I bend over like this to code? Okay, cool. So that was the interactive window and the things that came there in Visual Studio Update 1 and 2. Another thing that we did was we really worked on navigation. So how many of you wish that Visual Studio had Go:D implementation in it? Yeah, like people like want this so bad. So what people used to do is they would do find all references on something to find where all the places it was implemented. And then you'd have to like go through this huge long list and you'd have to just guess which ones were the implementations. And it was such a hassle. But now in Visual Studio Update 1, we can just go here and right click. And if you see in here, we have a go to implementation, which is part of the F12 navigation family now. And so if I do this, it's going to show me all the different implementations. So you can see here, person, the different implementations are person, student, and teacher. So from any base type or member, you can navigate to its various implementations. And if you only have one, we'll just navigate you directly to where that one implementation is. So this is something people asked us for a long time, and now it's finally in Visual Studio Update 1, 2015 Update 1. Another thing that we did is if I do find all references on this, whoa, this looks way different, doesn't it? Okay, so this is something coming in the next version of Visual Studio, where because of Roslyn, we now can add these things really quickly. So we've, for example, colorized entire find all references. So before, this used to be a flat list that was all like black plain text. And now we're able to actually colorize all of this. And a lot of people told us they hate how Final References has no hierarchy in it. It's just this flat list. So now we've added custom grouping in here. So you can basically choose how everything is sorted in here for you. So I can change it to group by path and project, by definition only, which is what you see today. And you can just change how all of this is organized to help you find your references faster. We've also, as kind of just a vanity point, made it so you can just hover over any of these references to get more context about where it is in your code. Something you might have noticed also is that there's VB in here. What? And so if you have a combined C-sharp VB project, we actually, in Visual Studio 2015 and beyond, we've made it with Roslyn. It's super easy for us to integrate all of these things together. So if you find a reference, it'll find it in the VB project and C-sharp, and it'll just do that flawlessly. So we have great tooling support in 2015 for C-sharp and VB combined projects. And that's pretty much what is in. And so I can like collapse these if you don't want to see the VB ones, for example. And you only want to see C-sharp, you can collapse this. You can lock results as well. So if you do a Final References, for example, you want to do a big refactoring, you want to see everywhere that's going to be affected, you can lock your results. And then when you do another Final References, it'll open up in a new tab so you don't lose everything that you had before. All right, and the last navigation thing we've done, which I got called out for in my last talk, was that if I press Control T, which actually this feature has existed in Visual Studio since Visual Studio 2013, might have been even been before then. It was Control Comma, and it was called Navigate 2. Does anyone know what that is? Yes, I thought. Okay, so no one really knows what this feature is, so we decided to rename it to something that people actually understand. So it's called Go To now in Visual Studio Next. What you can do in here is type any file. File name, type name, etc., and it'll appear in this list. So it's any file type, member, or symbol name. You can type it in here, and it'll take you to its various declarations. So you see I've typed light here, and that's going to show me all the different files, types, members, etc. that have light. We also allow you to filter these. So there's little filter icons down here, if you can see those. They'll let you filter by the different things. So if you only want to see files, you can click that. If you only want to see types, you can click that, et cetera. You can hover over to see them. You can also adjust the scope. So if you only want to see it in the current document, you can do that as well. Also, there's hotkeys for all of them, or we have like a query syntax. So if you only want to see files, you can just type F and then type whatever you're looking for, and it'll automatically apply that filter. So those were the improvements to navigation we've done. I guess the last one that I could mention is that if you look very closely, you can see that there's these gray faded lines. Can you all see these? Woo! Here, here, and here. Can you all see those from where you are? Like just barely with the resolution here? Sorry. Well, there's these faded gray lines here connecting all the braces. And those are indent guides. You might recognize them from Productivity Power Tools if you use that extension. So we finally built it in the box. Basically what it allows you to do is, so say I'm working on code down here and I don't know what's in this brace. So you've always been able to hover over the bottom to see what the top brace is. But now you can hover over the actual indent guide and get more context on what the top of the brace actually is. And so that's something we've added, which I think it helps the most in XAML, because XAML is always hard to read with all these tags. But now they're all connected with all these vertical lines to help you have a better sense of where you are in your XAML. Cool. So another thing, now we're past navigation, you may have noticed that there was all those icons in the Go To feature that showed the Control T. There's like this new tray of icons, so we've actually brought the same kind of thing to IntelliSense. So you might have noticed in IntelliSense, when I was typing, it looked a little bit different. So for example, if I zoom in here, you might let me literally draw your attention to down here. And you'll see that there's all these icons down here now. So we've actually added IntelliSense filtering in Visual Studio Next. And so what this allows you to do is basically filter out your list to only the things that you want to see, so by category. So for example, this is WPF. Let's say I only want to see events. Oops. Then I can just click the event filter, and I'm only going to see events in here. Or if you like are one of those people that hates extension methods more than anything else, and you think they should never show in IntelliSense, you can check everything other than the extension methods icon, so you never have that cluttering your IntelliSense. And this is just really great when you have a large code base and so many members show up in this list. This just lets you filter them down to things you only want to see. It also helps when you're navigating an unfamiliar code base and you have to type things, like don't really know what the API is called, be like, no, it has to be a property, then you can just filter out to only properties, and then you can find what you need faster. Right, so the question is, if you filter, does it hold until the next time? And no, it doesn't. You have to do it every time. But we have, if you look down here, if you hover, there's a short key associated with each one. So you can see properties is just Alt-P. So we try to make it like really intuitive for you to filter these things as you're typing. And the last thing is, let's say, oops, in IntelliSense I do. So you can do camel case in IntelliSense. Which I don't know if, hopefully you knew that, but we do. And so we also now do highlighting. So a lot of people would type things to get this camel casing, and they wouldn't realize why things were being suggested to them. So we've actually bolded now the things in your results that are the reason why it was shown to you. So you see here I typed GL, and we get layer, and it's showing the G and the L in get layer are highlighted, and same for get local variable. Or get local value enumerator. And so now we do this, which makes people think that our IntelliSense is smarter, which is great, because now they know why things are suggested to them. So always helpful. Let's see. Okay, so that was any questions on IntelliSense filtering or highlighting or navigation?
Yeah, one navigation. That native code that it's
got quite as awesome. All right, so the question was, when is native code going to get as much love as managed code? So we are doing a lot of work on native code support in Visual Studio. I think a lot of it will be announced in November, maybe? I don't know. So hopefully soon we'll be able to show you the things that are coming. But we're definitely trying to do a lot of support for native. So the go-to stuff will be supported in native. And things like that. And there will be IntelliSense filtering as well for native. So yeah, okay. All right, so let's get to refactoring. So if we look in this file, you might notice that there's like a ton of faded out usings here. So as part of Roslyn, this new compiler that we have, we're running constant live analysis on your code base where we're trying to help you improve your code quality in your code base. And so this is trying to tell us that we have all these unused things. So if you ever see anything faded, that means you don't necessarily need it. So if you have a redundant cast or you have a qualification that you don't need or unnecessary usings, we're going to fade it out for you so you know that you can clean up your code base and make it more readable. And as part of this, you'll notice that there is this little light bulb icon here. And that's going to symbolize where there is a code fix available or refactoring. And so this is triggered with control dot. So control dot is going to be like your friend. And so basically, it's going to let you clean up all these things in a single click. So if I come here, I click control dot, it's going to say remove the unnecessary usings. And then it's going to give me a live code diff of what this change is going to do to my document. So just like in source control, red is code that gets removed, green is code that gets added. And so we can see here, when we remove unnecessary usings, it's just going to delete a lot of things from our file. So again, I can just do this, and they will be deleted. And you can do it across the entire solution if you want. So if I come down here, we zoom in, you can see that I can fix all occurrences in the document, project, or solution. So if you are trying to apply these kind of fixes, you can apply them across many different scopes if you want. So again, control dot triggers it. I can remove them all. So what are some other things that we have? So if I come into this file, for example, I'm going to first show you all the, well, not all of them, but most of the code actions or refactorings that are available in Visual Studio 2015, and then I'll show you all the new ones that we've added. So for example, say that I look at this code. So this is just getting a bunch of pull requests from the Roslyn repository. And I realized that this is kind of confusing and hard to read. I don't want people to have to deal with that. So I can actually select this code snippet and press Control Dot, and it's going to offer to extract the method for me. And so again, you get a live code preview of what this is going to do. I press Enter, and then it's going to drop me immediately into a rename session. So we just have a filler called new method, because we don't really know what you want to name this. But we immediately put in a rename session so that you can do it. So I could say, like, I don't know, provide query or something like that. And then I click Enter, and that submitted it. And so that's extract method. So you just select any code snippet, Control Dot, and then you can extract the method. Now you might notice that filter is only used in these two spots. And so I could just, it's basically a temporary variable, so I could just inline this. So again, just have my cursor anywhere near this, and then I can see that I have the option to inline temporary variable. So I can just inline this again, I get a live code preview of what this is going to do. Press Enter, and you can see it added it over here. And now let's say, oh my gosh, that made my code so long now. Now I can just select this, press Control Dot, and now I can introduce a local for this expression. So this is kind of how like Control Dot works. You either select things and press Control Dot, or you just have your cursor in the expression and press Control Dot, and then we're going to offer you all these different fixes and refactorings. So there, I do that. Again, drops me in a rename session. I can rename it whatever I want. Let's say now I realize I actually want the filter to come first in this method, and so I want to reorder my parameters. You can just press Control Dot in the signature to change the signature. And it's pop up this pop-up, and then I can just reorder things. So I can select filter and move it to the top and then click OK. Or I could remove things. And what this is going to do is, because Roslyn is the compiler and it knows exactly where all of your calls are, we are going to fix this everywhere in our code base for you. So as soon as you do this, you can now see that it reordered everything here and in my actual method down here. So I put filter first in both of these. And so it would do it everywhere in my solution when I do this. Let's see, are there any? Oh, so then things that we added in the update cycle for 2015, for example, like how many of us, I don't know, do something like this, and we type really fast, and then we misspell something, like client. Here, so I said like claint or something. Like, how many of us are like, yo, Microsoft makes Microsoft Word. Why can't we just have spell check and Visual Studio? Like, you're the same company. Come on. Do some of us feel like that? Yeah? Well, okay. So now you press Control Dot, and it's like, oh, you should probably fix your misspelling, and we're gonna figure out what you probably meant here. So how many of you are pretty excited about that? Yeah, okay. That's what I thought. So this happens to us all the time, and now I can just press Control Dot to actually access this fix. We've actually taken it a step farther and say that we want to like serialize this or something, and we type, JSON convert, but we don't actually have the package installed here. We're gonna actually go find it for you and be like, oh hey, this looks like it's on a type on NuGet, and then we're gonna offer, if you see here, we're gonna say, oh, we recognize this type from NuGet.org, it's in this package, find and install the latest version, and we'll add the using for you. And so this is another thing that we've added in Visual Studio 2015 as update 2 or 3, one of those that it came in. And so that's just another thing that we're trying to do to help developer productivity. All right, so I think that was pretty much the ones that came in 2015. So now let's look at the ones that came in later versions. So in Visual Studio Next, how many of you are like me here, where we write all of our classes in the same file at first, and then later we like to pull them out into a file with the same name? Do a lot of people have that workflow? So before, it used to be a huge hassle to have like cut and paste code, make new files in Solution Explorer, et cetera. Well, now you can just stick your cursor anywhere in this, and then we're gonna offer to move the type to a new file with the same name. So if I zoom in here, you can see that my class is called pull request contribution, and now we're going to offer to move it to a file called pull request contribution. So for example, if I do this, it's going to move it. I can do it to this one as well. And now I've cleaned up this one to only be contribution. If I come to Solution Explorer, I zoom in, you can see that I now have issue contribution here and pull request contribution here. And so I've made classes with the same name here. So if you do have this workflow where you like to type all your classes in the same file and then pull them out later, or any type in the same file and move them out later, then now you can do that. A lot of us also move code around a lot. So let's say somehow this becomes contribution 2 instead of contribution, which is the name of my file. And so my file name and my type name have now become out of sync. You can just press Control Dot, and then we're going to give you these two fixes. So we're either going to offer to rename the file to match your type or rename the type to match your file, so whichever one was your purpose. And so now you can just quickly do this without having to worry about it messing up. And it'll fix it everywhere in your code for you. So anywhere where you call contribution 2 and you're now renaming it to contribution, we will do that rename fix for you everywhere. Cool. Let me see if I missed anything. Oh, yeah. Okay. So if we come back to GitHub stuff, you may have, like, if you looked very carefully when I was doing this demo, you may have noticed that I had var filter here, but then when I introduced the temporary variable, it put the explicit type instead of var. Did anyone notice that? Okay. You're probably like, what? And so also, you may notice, if you looked very, very closely, which you probably can't see if you couldn't see the indent guides, that there's like a faded gray dotted line under var here. Yeah, you can't see that. We're gonna make it darker in the next preview that's coming out for Visual Studio next. It got pretty light, but there is a faded dot under here. And what that's indicating, if I hover over this and press Control Dot, you can see that's telling me to use the explicit type over var. So this is part of a big thing that we're doing in Visual Studio next, where we're trying to introduce code style enforcement. So we basically talked to a lot of dev leads who said that they're wasting so much time in code reviews discussing like the minutia of code style instead of focusing on the logic of code reviews. They also said it's really hard to onboard new devs when all the code looks different and you can tell that like Joe wrote this file and Sammy wrote that one. And it makes it just hard to figure out where things are for these newly onboarded devs. So we're trying to now make it so you can enforce code style however you want on your team. So if I come tools, options, and I type in code style, I can now see that there's this code style that I can do, and I can change how I want things enforced in the editor. So we have suggestion, which was that faded gray dot that you all unfortunately couldn't see from back there. But I can change it to be a warning or an error or to have no enforcement in my editor. And so all these are going to do is change how it appears in the editor. So a warning will give it a green squiggle, error will give it a red squiggle, and the suggestion will give it the faded gray dot. And basically, the only difference between these really is, besides how they appear, is that an error is going to break your build. So if you're a big stickler for code style on your team, you can make everything an error. And so if they ever, ever disagree or violate your style rule, their code won't compile. Which may seem extreme, but people like really want this, so that is something that you can do. There's a couple more preferences that'll be coming later, like if you want to prefer that use an object initializer, for example, we will also have that as a style setting in here. But these are now things that you'll be able to configure. And right now, they're only in tools options, but we're planning to extend the file format called editor config, which is an open source file format that is used across many different editors, like VS Code supports it, for example. And we're using it to extend it to work with custom analyzers and code style analyzers. So from a single text file, you can just write text that will change your enforcement, and it'll travel with your source control, be able to be used from the command line and in your CI. Cool, so that was code style. So for example, I had the thing that I have for, built-in types, it was an error. Let's go back. For built-in types, it was an error for me to use the explicit type, was what I set it as here. So now you can see if I type that, so say like int x equals 42, now you're gonna see that int gives me a big old red squiggle and it's telling me to use var instead of int because I set that preference. Otherwise, I won't be able to compile this, which would be frustrating. So that's all up to you to do. Cool. And so again, you can use, like in the previous talk I gave, which you can look up later online, I delve into how you can write your own custom analyzer. So for example, if you're one of those people that doesn't think a method should be longer than 100 lines of code, you can make it so it's an error and say, like, you have to extract this out into like smaller helpers and stuff. So you can write any of these that you want and install them as a NuGet package in Visual Studio and enforce them on your team. Cool. So now let's get to the languages. So basically, the takeaways for productivity are that we now have a bunch of in-the-box refactorings for you to use. We're adding more and more every day. We have better navigation with GoTo. We have GoTo implementation now. We've improved find all references, so everything's colorized. You can change the hierarchy of displays or hierarchy of results. We have better IntelliSense now with that filtering. We have configurable code style coming, and then you can write your own analyzer for anything we missed. If you really want to know what the difference is between the two versions and all the things that have been added in them, this is a crazy long list that's not even full, but it gives you the gist of what is in both of these versions and an overview of what's coming in the next version. So let's get on to the languages. All right, so over half of you said you use C# 6. Do you all use all of these features in C# 6? Yeah, okay, so do we want to skip this section or do we want to review it real quick? All right, we're going to review it. All right, okay, so the goal of C# 6 in Visual Basic 14 was to basically make code more readable and compact. So it's pretty much just full of a lot of syntactic sugar kind of things. And so, that was that slide. Okay, so let's go into our code. Actually, we're gonna go into WPF. So let's start with string interpolation, which is my favorite. Okay, so say that we have a string, we wanna print PR, print contribution, info. What I would have to do today, maybe it didn't matter. Okay, so I can return, we'd have to string.format. Okay, and so let's say that I want my type of the contribution to be here, I want the title to be here, and then the name of the author that did it here. And then I have to make sure that I put it all in the right order. So title, user.login. Man. What did I do wrong? String format. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. So now I can be like, oh, whew, that was so long. And you don't actually know if you like match things up. You just like visually go and be like, okay, what was in the zero? What went in the one? And it's super confusing. So what we can actually do in string interpolation is now we can just put a dollar sign in front of our open quotes. And now when we actually put these braces in, we're actually putting holes in our string. So I can just do type title by user.login. And so this is a side-by-side comparison of what the two look like now. So this is much, I think, easier to read and much more less likely for you to mess up. And we actually do in Visual Studio Next actually just have a refactoring for this. So it's say convert to interpolated string, and it'll just change it for you. And so you could do that everywhere in your entire solution also. So if you were like, woohoo, we're upgrading, you could do it, not in this one, but you can do it everywhere in your entire solution to just fix it everywhere. So that was string interpolation. Now let's show something else. So one of the value adds of this is, again, that it's making code more readable and compact. So if we look at this file in WPF, it is how many lines? 108 lines of code. So something that we've added is something called an expression-bodied member, which basically lets you make a one-line method truly one line. And so what I mean by this is, for example, let's scroll to the bottom. Here, I only do one thing in this method, so why not just make it with this equal arrow syntax into one line? And so I can do this now. And for example, you might see here, I actually have an analyzer that's detecting it in most cases. So here, it's telling me to use an expression by a member. And so all that is doing is it's making you convert an actual one-line method to truly one line using this equal arrow syntax. We've actually found that this makes lambdas make more sense to people because they see the equal arrow syntax, and for some reason, it helps them understand it better. So got that nice little value add. And so what we can do now is do this. We're going to do it everywhere in this document. And when I apply this change, I can now see that I only have 94 lines of code now. So that took me down like 14 lines at least, which is pretty awesome. And then if I come back up, I can actually delete the spaces between these and lose even more lines. Oh my God, we're down 91. Okay, cool. So another thing you might have noticed is that there's a lot of faded out code here in this raised property changed event. So how many of us like hate doing all this extra ceremony? We kind of wish this were just one line, but we now have to do all these null checks and stuff. So what we can actually do is use the C#6 language feature of question dot, which is the null conditional. And what this is doing is it's basically doing the null check for you. So it's saying if property changed is null, return null. Otherwise, you're going to just dot into it safely. And so we're just getting rid of the need for all of this. So again, I can make this, all the ceremony that I had to do here, I can just remove it immediately with the null conditional operator. And then the other thing I can do is I showed you the using static. So if I do using static, that removes the need to qualify things. So you can see here I have GitHub stuff. And I don't, it's faded out because I have using static, so I can just simplify this. So again, just making things more readable and compact. And the last thing I can do is, how many of us, when we, okay, so as you can see, I have a raised property changed event, and I have to put in the string literal of my variable name. And so when I rename this, you can see that it doesn't rename the string literal. And that like causes so many issues to say, I make this two, and then I have to remember everywhere that I did this property changed event and update it, right? Huge hassle. Well, we now in C#6 have the name of feature, which is gonna let us do name of, which just literally returns the string literal of this variable. But now, when I rename this, it's going to rename what was in the name of. And so now everywhere in your code where you had this, you can now be consistent. Cool. So that was C#6. Most of these are also in VB14, but I'll show them in the next demo. Any questions on C#6? Cool. C#7, more exciting, and VB15, okay. So the purpose of C#7 and VB15 is to improve working with data. So a lot of people now have like cloud computing, blah, blah, blah. They want to work with data and different types of data, and C# really needs to modernize itself to be able to fit those demands. So that's what we're trying to do here. So tuples and pattern matching specifically are the ones in that respect. So we don't need to go through all this because I'm just going to demo it. Okay. So let's go over here. So the first thing I'm going to show is tuples. So the main value out of tuples is that it lets you, it's going to let you return multiple values from a method. So say I have here, I want to return a person and a lightsaber. Oh, we're gonna call this what? Get the gone. Make an expression by member because it's gonna be one line, and then it's just gonna be, let's see, a new person. Qui-Gon Jinn. Is that how you spell Qui-Gon Jinn? Probably. Who am I kidding? Like I don't know how to spell this. Okay, and then new lightsaber, and then he has a green one. All right, so now you can see I've just created a method that takes two, or that has two return types. So it's returning to me a person and a lightsaber. And I can actually go into VB and I can have this. So I can say, oops, dim gone tuple equals person.
Jackson demo. And so now, no semicolons. Okay. So now when I do, I always mess that up. Okay. Now when I want to print things out, I can, So let's do string interpolation here and VB. So now what happens if I go gone tuple and I want to get the person here, you can see that has item one and item two, which probably looks familiar in the system tuple that you used before, which really isn't. So it holds the gone tuple item. And so especially like if you are a consumer of someone's library that returns tuples, it's going to be super hard for you to remember item one and item two and like mapped in your head like which element in the tuple it is. So what we've tried to do is you can actually name these. So I could say this is person Jedi and this is lightsaber saber. And so now when I come back over here, I go to my IntelliSense, you can see that I have the human readable names in here. So Jedi and Saber are now available to me. And so now I can call this Saber, which is a much more human readable and user-friendly way of doing tuples. So you can name your members of your tuple like this. So tuples are supported in both VB and C#, and you can consume them from each other. All right. Now on to pattern matching. So you can see here in this method, what I'm doing is I'm checking that I'm saying if P is a student, then print this. If it's a teacher, print this, et cetera. And so I'm looking at the shape of this expression. And to do that, I have to do a bunch of casting, see if my cast returned null, and then from there do a bunch of stuff. And this is like a way condensed version of it, so that would fit on screen. But a lot of us do like the cast outside and things like that. So what we can do with pattern matching is we can make this look way nicer. So I can just say if P is student. And then I can name this pattern S. So if P is a student, we're going to refer to it as S. And then I can delete this temporary local I had up here. And so now here again, I can do P is student stu. Then I have to reference it as stu down here. And then here I can do P, that didn't work. P is teacher T. And then I'm done. And so now I can delete this up here. And so now I got rid of all these locals I had to define, and I can check the type in a more human readable fashion. If you prefer switch statements, you can do this as well. So if we want to instead switch on this, I could switch on P. And when I do this, then now I can do case and make all of these cases instead. And I can actually rename this to S. And this one, case. And the only thing is now when we do the case syntax, the and becomes when. So this is when you check the shape and then the content you use when. And then now we have our default. And voila. Now, some people prefer the switch as opposed to the if statements, but you can do either and it is valid syntax. And so this is what pattern matching now looks like. So I can say, now when it is a student, call it S, and then refer it to S later. And you can do this throughout. Okay. Any questions on pattern matching? Cool. The last thing you can do that I'm going to show is local functions. So what local functions lets you do is get rid of this, take this, and we're just going to nest this method inside of the bigger method main. And so let's say that printed form, we only call it once. It's only ever called once from main. Then we can just nest it inside. And so this lets you like help clean up your classes, for example. It also lets you remove the need for a lot of passing of parameters. So now I can just delete this parameter person because I don't need it anymore, because I have P defined up here. So I'm just switching on this P and checking these things. And so that's basically the value add of local functions, is that it's going to let you basically nest helpers inside the primary method that calls it, and if it's the only one that calls it, and lets you clean up your class because of that, because you're just nesting these things, and then you can remove parameters. But that's basically some. It's kind of a controversial feature that we've added. Some people really hate it. You don't have to use it, but that's what it is. Cool. So that was the top three. Yeah. They're basically just like local variables, essentially, except you can, let me show you. I forgot to tell you to say this part. You also, it doesn't matter where you define a local function. So you can see here, I actually call it before I define it, which is a feature that we've added. It required a lot of compiler magic to do this, but so it's not truly a local variable because you can actually define it afterwards, but that's something that I can do now. So you can just put all your helpers to the bottom. And then you just shove them all down there and have access them at the top without having to have them all at the top of your method and then do all your real work at the bottom. Yes, I believe that's how it is under the hood. Yeah. All right, so the last two features, the ref returns and value task of t, you can ignore these unless you are actively measuring the number of allocations you make. And if you're like actually measuring the amount of time you spend in GC, then these are two features that are really gonna help you with your performance. They're like pretty like elite like that or whatever, but basically they're just gonna reduce the number of allocations you have. So now you can return refs, so you can pass in refs and not return them, and then value task is gonna make it. So if you're only awaiting sometimes, then you can use value task to reduce the number of allocations that you make. But you really only need to investigate those if you are measuring allocations. Otherwise, we don't recommend you use them. So with that segue on performance, let's talk about performance. So how many of you say you work on a project that or a solution that has more than 10 projects in it? Oh, dang, that's like almost everyone. Okay, cool. So I guess I would consider that large. Do you consider that large? What do you okay, how many projects are in your all solutions? More than 20? 250, okay, all right. So basically, suffice it to say, we are in the large category now. So how many of you can resonate with this quote that's on the screen, that performance is like your biggest issue with Visual Studio? Yeah, so a lot of hands. So we hear this a lot, so we've done something about it. So the first is, as part of Rails, and so this new compiler that's doing all this live code analysis, the great thing is that it runs on your entire solution, but that's also kind of the bad thing about it, it's running on your entire solution. So when you have 250 projects in your solution and we're constantly doing live analysis to find all the errors in your solution every time you type, that gets super performance heavy. And so we've actually, in Visual Studio 2015 Update 3, turned off full solution analysis by default. So here is in Tools Options where you can turn it back on if you want it. But basically now it will only run on your open files. So that's where we're trying to save you when you're on a huge project like that. And so we'll only run live code analysis on your open files. If you still do refactoring, all that stuff, it'll still work across all of them. But if you want to get all your errors live, you have to turn on this. Otherwise, you'll only find them when you build. Okay, does that make sense? Okay, so that was the first thing that we did. The other recommendation we kind of have is if you have code lens. So if you're on a memory-constrained system, we found that turning off code lens can help some people that have large solutions. But now in Visual Studio Next, we've actually done some like real heavy work to do this. So we've moved all live code analysis out of process, and we've moved several other things out of process as well. So this should never interfere with your typing time now. So anytime that we're doing live code analysis, it shouldn't lag Visual Studio, because now in a different process. And the big thing that we did is deferred project load is coming in Visual Studio Next. So when you do have one of these solutions that has 250 projects and you only work on one of them, it really stinks to have to wait like 15 minutes for everything to load before you can start working. And so all deferred project load does
is basically it lazily loads things. So it's only going to load them. You only have to pay for the wait time the first time you load something. So if you do only work on two projects, you just have to wait for those two projects to load. You don't have to wait for the rest of the 248 to load before you can start working. And so that will be in Visual Studio next. It's in beta form in preview 5 of Visual Studio next if you want to play with it. So we'd love to get your feedback on it. But that's another way that we're trying to improve performance for people that have these massive solutions. So again, just a recap of the things that we're doing is we're moving a lot of things out of the main Visual Studio process. We're doing deferred project load. And if you do have a large solution, none of these things are working, we've compiled a list of like elite tricks that you can do, which involve like changing like reg keys and stuff. So you can find those at the link at the bottom. Cool. So that was an overview of Visual Studio 2015 and what Roslyn is and how it's a game changer for productivity today in terms of this live code analysis and enabling you to write your own custom analyzer. We've added a lot of productivity enhancements in both Visual Studio 2015 and the next version. If you think that we're missing something, please let me know because we want to address those. We have lots of new language features coming, and we're really excited that New Zealand is on top of it and embraced C-sharp 6 already. Like, you all are ahead of the game here. So that's pretty exciting. And C-sharp 7, you can already play in the previews of Visual Studio next today. Preview 5, you can play with all of them. And then we're really trying to improve performance. So if none of these performance tricks work for you, please reach out to me because we found that people are doing some very interesting stuff with their solutions that we never foresaw. So please let us know so that we can figure out how to make things more performant for you. If you do want to learn more about live code analysis, this was the other session I did here at MS Ignite New Zealand that you can watch online if you're interested. And then here are like random resources that you can use for other things. Any questions? Yeah. So the question was, a lot of the productivity stuff you saw was cool. A lot of it's offered by ReSharper today. So what is the goal? Are we just trying to compete, or are we trying to innovate and create new cool things? So obviously the answer is we're trying to innovate and do cool things, obviously. We were working on Project Roslyn for about 8 years. And so because of that, we couldn't really invest in a lot of time into the editor space. But now it's done. The whole point was that we could write all these new features faster. And so now we're just cranking out the things. And so the ones that we've prioritized are the ones that we've heard developers want in the box as soon as possible. And so that's where we're starting. But yeah, we're trying to innovate and do lots of cool things. So yeah. Anything else? Yeah. I see. Yes, so the question is, will the new language features like C-sharp 6 or C-sharp 7 be available in earlier versions of Visual Studio? So they all depend on whether you have Roslyn support. So Roslyn is only supported in Visual Studio 2015. And so that version, so it's based on the version of your compiler. So no C-sharp 6 or C-sharp 7 will ever work in 2013, for example, or earlier versions. So you have to have the right version of the compiler. I think we're working to make it so that the compiler can actually be like a NuGet that you can install.
But C-sharp 7 could work.
In 2015? I'm not actually totally sure, but I think so. I think we're trying to make it so you can install it as a NuGet on top, and then it will just put in the new compiler. But it won't have the refactoring type of support. Like, you'll be able to compile it, but you won't have all the IDE support behind it. Yeah, so the IDE support for the new languages is based on the version of Visual Studio you have. Yeah, in theory, yeah. Yes?
The spell check, does it work only with the whole words, or it works with Pascal-based full names also, fully qualified names?
Oh, so the question was, does the spell checker work on like fully qualified long names?
Long names and Pascal-based
so it doesn't matter on the casing and stuff like that. Or, oh, you're saying, so if it's not camel case and it should be, does it work?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I can show you if you want. Yeah, so like say I do J token, and the T is actually supposed to be, it actually fixes it to match the camel case you can see here. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, and if there are like more words, like compound words, like get data or something.
Yeah.
Get my data or something. Will it work with data?
Yes, it should, yeah. Let's see, what do you want? So printed form, for example. Like this, you're talking about?
Yeah.
Let's see. Control that. It looks like nope. Interesting, but it showed up in IntelliSense. Okay, let's see. Var x equals. There we go. Yeah, so it does work. Mm-hmm.
And you misspell one of the two, so for example, F O R M becomes F R O M. Does the spell check pick that up?
From the word.
Oh, sorry. Okay, F F O R.
So like this? Is that what you're talking about? I said printed from, and it should be printed form, and it fixed it.
It doesn't use a language dictionary, though. It isn't
annoying. Oh yeah, it doesn't have. Yeah, it doesn't know actual English. Or a foreign language when you do foreign language support. Yeah. It's just looking at other types that you have and trying to figure out. I wonder what software changes are required here. Okay. but yay, Windows 10. Okay. Yeah, it's looking at other types you have and like doing an algorithm to see like did you switch a couple things to misspell it. So it's not actually like Microsoft Word spell checker in here. Because then we'd have to download an entire English dictionary. Which you all said performance was a big thing. Yeah, and then like, you know, the Kiwi version and the British version, and then if you type in German and every other language in the world. Yeah. Any other questions? Yeah.
The renaming file name feature, along with changing the class name.
Uh-huh. Yeah, all of these should work for everything, yeah. Do you mean like in a Razor?
That's a classic .NET.
Yeah, it should work, yeah, in C#, anywhere in C#. So the question was, do like syncing the file and class name work in ASP.NET web forms, for example? And the answer is yes, it should, yeah. Mm-hmm. The only thing that I believe doesn't work is like a rename from a C# file will not change what it is in Razor today, which is something that we're working on prioritizing. Yeah. Anything else? Yeah.
That feature to auto suggest a NuGet package,
uh-huh.
Do you have to be online for that to work?
Yes, for it to download. Oh, so the question was the feature where it automatically downloads the NuGet package and adds the using, do you have to be online for that to work? And the answer is yeah, you have to have internet connection to download the NuGet. We've had this request to actually make it so you can set the server that you want it to download from. So that's definitely on our like backlog is something we need to consider. So if you do have no internet access, you could like have the list of packages and then we would just pull it from there. But it's not going to be in Visual Studio Next right now. Yeah.
That NuGet search, is it actually looking at the packages or is there like a list of popular ones that it knows have these types that can be used very often?
Right, so the question is for the NuGet search, how does that actually work? We basically look at, I think, the first 1,000 and we index all of them. And then we know all the types in them and then we go from there, yeah. And so you can turn it off if you think that that's going, like you don't have the space for the couple megabytes that it is to do that index. We can turn it off, so yeah. Uh-huh.
What if you say, included in the NuGet package in your other projects, the one you're in doesn't have a reference, so you can use that one if you're
offline? You mean the version of that's in that one?
Say you've included JSON.NET,
Let's find out. I know that if you have a reference assembly from one, then we'll actually offer to add that one for you. But let's, like, for example, go in here and do some. He has support for JSON in VB, right? Maybe. Yeah. So yeah, it looks like it's still going to the internet probably to do this. What do you mean? Oh yeah, you're right. So I didn't actually add it in this one. You're right. Okay, so let me actually add it. Well, I don't. Hopefully, I don't have any JSON. Can I actually do this? Okay. Install it. Oh, bummer. Okay. Oh, I'm not on the internet here. Oops. That could be the problem. Oh, dang it. VPN stuff. Okay. Well, I can't actually test it here, apparently. But I actually don't know. So I can get back with you and let you know. Or I could try it out on preview 5. Cool. I'm over time. But if you have more questions, I will be around. Thank you guys for coming.